If you ask the question, who's really in charge, it seems as if the answer is completely obvious. The evidence seems stacked up. You look in the world, you live in the real world, and the answer is clear, no one. No one's really in charge, not really in control. Things seem out of control. And that's perhaps a rather strange thing to say on General Election Day, perhaps, because for the last few months, or even years, politicians have been making their promises about what they're going to do when they themselves are in charge, and we are voting on who we agree with or who we trust most or more to deliver. And indeed, I hope you have or will vote today. Putting your cross in the box is a great privilege and it is a duty. So I hope that that is something you take seriously. And yet, there are still limits. Even politicians, even the most extreme politicians, know that they cannot do everything. They can introduce some changes, but even then, they themselves are at the mercy of forces greater than themselves. There are countless things that remind us of our limitations and indeed our powerlessness. So former Prime Minister Harold Macmillan was once asked by a journalist in the 1960s about what was most likely to throw governments off course, and he famously replied, "Events, dear boy, events. You just don't know what's going to happen next." And even the best intentions can get completely derailed by things that came from the middle of nowhere. You didn't see that one coming. No one could have predicted it. And so it goes on. You see, there's a simple fact. It's a simple fact that whatever our delusions might be, whatever our aspirations might be, we are not in charge. That's the bottom line. And there's a whole range of things that remind us of this. I'm just going to pick out three very briefly that remind us of our limitations. The first is, well, those things that are genuinely natural disasters. And of course, events in the last few weeks have reminded us, and that the ash cloud is rearing its head again. It reminds us that there are things that are way beyond our control. So the impact of Mount Unpronounceable has been immense. The skies above Europe have been able to breathe once again for the first time for decades. But then there are those sort of natural disasters that seem to be the result of human error and or human fallibility. So again, what's going on in off the Florida coast at the moment is an example. Man-made natural disasters. And the consequences will be natural and will be sort of exacerbated by things going on in the natural world, and yet their root cause, well, you have to say, is human. Or take something like a famine. At first sight, the failure of crops is a natural event. But so often, and you see these in the parts of the world where people are going hungry, you see that actually war and human greed conspire to make what was perhaps relievable far, far worse. There's enough food in the world, and yet human blame is not far away from making these things terrible. But then there are, just on top of those sort of natural disasters, there are those things that actually people do to each other, what you might call man-made inhumanity. Millions suffer at the hands of those with evil intent, whether those people gain political power or not. But if they do gain political power, it can be truly terrible. And it seems that everything then goes out of control. And the worst thing about it is that even for the worst dictators, they themselves are at the mercy of other forces. Even dictators have to deal with events, dear boy. There are times when evil seems to be unrestrained, and I could go on and on and on. I'm sure you could give countless more examples. But you see, this is where I think we come up with a bit of a brick wall. You see, our experience of the world might lead us to think that no one's in charge. That this is a world driven by sort of impersonal forces and coincidences and awful events. But the brick wall is the Bible. The Bible claims otherwise. The Bible claims that, yes, well, we're not in charge, but there is someone who is. It claims that there is a God who is in charge. And one of the most stark places to see this is from a man who wrote centuries ago. If you turn to the Bibles on the table, page 724, and you'll find something part of Isaiah's book, written hundreds of years ago, hundreds of years before Jesus, in fact. Isaiah chapter 40, and it's page 724 in those Bibles on the tables. And Isaiah believed that there was a God who was in charge. I mean, he lived at a pretty tumultuous period. There were sort of, you know, massive sort of geopolitical bully boys on the horizon. They lived in Israel, this little sort of corridor, very vulnerable strip of land between three continents, basically, between Africa, Asia, and Europe. And so basically they were acutely aware of different sort of power struggles and shifts in balances of power. And yet Isaiah clung to this belief that there was a God who was in charge, even though that seems extraordinary. And yet he's saying, look, your God is far bigger, far greater than you could possibly imagine. And there are two examples of this. In chapter 40, the first one, you see in verses 25 and 26. So Isaiah is quoting God himself. He says, to whom will you compare me? Or who else is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls them each by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. Now that's a staggering claim, isn't it? Now, it seems completely far-fetched. Especially as our understanding in the last, I don't know, 200 or 300 years or so, has our understanding of the cosmos has meant that the universe is far bigger than we could possibly have imagined. Even just a few years ago, it seems to be growing in size. But it's interesting, isn't it, that despite what some of the more sort of rabid seems to claim, more and more cosmologists and physicists are being quite open about their faith in a God. It's just a fact. There are many, many people at the top of their fields in this area of cosmology and astronomy who see no contradiction at all. And in fact, some say that the accumulation of discoveries over the last 100 years or so even suggests a demand for the existence of a God. So there is no inherent contradiction. And Isaiah is, of course, using human language to describe complex cosmic activities, but then why shouldn't he? The point is he's making a very simple observation. As you see the sort of dynamics of the universe at work, and from his perspective, basically you can only have a sort of earthbound view of how it all is. From his perspective, it's very simple. There is a God, and he is in charge. And the universe exists in the way that it does because of God. But the verses before this little paragraph are even more controversial and more staggering. Not only is God in charge over the cosmos, he's in charge over human rulers. Have a look at verse 21. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and his people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner they take root in the ground than he blows on them and they wither. A whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. It's an astonishing claim. And it seems ridiculous at first sight. For it suggests that whatever we vote today, whoever gets the keys to number 10, God was actually in charge all the time. Now, the more you think about this, the more it makes your brain hurt. Is that really possible? More than that, if that is the case, then how actually can we see that God is good? I mean, if he's in charge, look at some of the terrible things that rulers of all hues and stripes get up to. In fact, many down the centuries have justified the terrible things they have done in power by saying, well, God put them in power in the first place. That gives them carte blanche. That gives them a free hand. No wonder people wanted to find an alternative, and hence the sort of checks and balances of a mature political system. So that rulers, dictators, princes do not have a free hand, because you can't trust them. But perhaps we can sum up the problem, as many see it, in two ways. Because, our experience of the world seems to indicate otherwise. Can God really be in charge? You don't expect me to believe that, do you? Well, the first problem is, doesn't that just make us robots? Just pre-programmed. If God is in charge, isn't that how it is? Is he the one who's calling the election today? Then what's the point in voting at all? We're just pre-programmed to do whatever the boss says. I mean, that is the ultimate in not being in charge, isn't it? Not having any initiative, any responsibility at all. And of course, if there is no responsibility, there can be no blame either. Well, I couldn't help it. It's not my fault. I was just made that way. But despite the restrictions, despite the constraints and problems and things that go wrong in all our lives, it doesn't fit with our experience, does it? Being a robot? That's not my experience of living life. I'm sure it isn't yours either. What's more, it's a far cry from actually how the Bible sees us, how Isaiah sees us, each of us as unique, responsible, living creatures. And remarkably, the Bible sees absolutely no contradiction whatsoever between God being in charge and human beings being responsible. As far as the Bible is concerned, it never sees a problem with that, even though, of course, it's hard to get our heads around it. And of course, it's certainly the way that God in the Bible treats people as responsible. And think about this. Why else would God invite us to pray to him? If he wasn't in charge, what would be the need to pray? Or what would be the point of prayer? And if we weren't responsible, why invite us to pray? Not only that, actually, experience and even the sort of remotest understanding of human history will know that actually, the so-called thousand-year reichs and the dictatorships that are going to go on forever never do. They crumble, they fall, and princes do come to naught. That is experience of history. People would say that communism would last forever. People say that capitalism will last forever. Well, if you have any insights from human history, you'll know that no system ever lasts forever, that things do come to an end, and things do change, which seems to indicate precisely what Isaiah is talking about. So it looks like a reasonable objection to say, well, that just leaves us robots. Well, not necessarily. And it's certainly not the way we experience life. But maybe another objection is, well, it's just improbable. You're trying to find rhyme or reason behind events, some sort of overarching plan or purpose. It's just, frankly, unlikely. How can we possibly maintain that if God exists, he's in charge? There are just too many contradictions, there are too many mysteries, too many absurdities. Well, I grant you that there are mysteries. There are many mysteries, and I am certainly not standing here claiming to have sussed it all, by no means. What I think I can do is point us in the right direction, and it's a direction that certainly has satisfied me, because, you see, the Bible does not dot every I and cross every T, but it does insist on this, that yes, there is a God who is in charge, and that we are responsible beings. Not only that, it insists, actually, that Jesus Christ, Jesus of Nazareth, who lived nearly 2,000 years ago or so, that he was God stepping into his world, and that he was in charge of events. If you read the gospel accounts, and I would strongly recommend that you do, just take one of the gospels and just read it through and just simply see, just ask this simple question all the way through. Who's the boss here? Who's in charge? you'll see that Jesus, again and again and again, is the master of events. He looks as though he's trapped. He looks as though he's been cornered, and then he just knows exactly the right thing to say that changes everything. Happens again and again. Even at those darkest moments, even at the moment when it looks all as if all is lost, when everything's gone wrong. And I think this idea gets best summed up by one of Jesus' closest friends, a man called Peter. And he's speaking in the weeks just after Jesus' resurrection in Jerusalem. He's speaking about it as an event that people will have heard about. He's speaking to a crowd in the city center, and they'll have heard about this. And the amazing thing is that we see, yes, God is in charge, and yes, human beings responsible in the same breath. Because you see, you could say that this was the place that God put his cross. This is the place to start in trying to deal with this question, where God put his cross. And I'll put the verses up, because basically here, Peter is preaching to the crowd. In the book of Acts, it tells the story of the first years of the church's existence. And he's speaking to the crowd, and in the bit just before on the screen, Peter says to the crowd, look, Jesus of Nazareth was a man accredited by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs, which God did among you through him, as you yourselves know, Peter says. He's speaking to this crowd. It's only a few weeks back. They knew, they saw, they can remember. And then he goes on like this. This man was handed over to you by God's set purpose and foreknowledge. Do you see? This is God in charge. It was God's plan that this is what would happen to Jesus. The divine element. But then Peter goes on, and you, speaking to the people in front of him, you, with the help of wicked men, put him to death by nailing him to the cross. That was the human responsibility bit. That's what people wanted to do. And you can see this again and again in the gospel accounts. People were looking for ways to trap him, to catch him, to kill him. For all kinds, then you had this extraordinary sort of unholy alliance of people who wouldn't even share the time of day with each other, coming together to get this man killed. It's what they wanted to do. They were responsible. It's what they wanted. And yet at the same time, it is part of God's plan. But God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death, because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. Do you see? The two go hand in hand. People responsible, God in charge. But this is the most important thing. What does God use his authority? The fact of him being in charge, what does he use that for? I mean, if you had sort of limitless power, if you had sort of, you know, the power at your fingertips available to, you know, that dictators dream of, what would you do with that power? Well, this is what God did with his power, because if he is God and if he is the ruler of the cosmos, he does indeed have everything at his fingertips. He can do whatever he likes with it. This is what he did. He sent Jesus to earth to die. The most staggering thought. Jesus came to die on the cross. He decided this is what he was going to do all the way through. You can see in the Gospels again and again. And you see one example in Luke's Gospel. He resolutely sets out for Jerusalem because he knows that's where he's going to die. He knows what's going to happen. He resolutely sets out for it. Why would he do that? Well, because that's the only way that God, in his sovereignty, in his authority, could combine two things. One, to show that the terrible things in the world that we do to one another do matter to him. That he does see the terrible things people do. He is concerned for justice and human suffering and human inhumanity. Evil must be named as such. A God in charge must bring justice. Otherwise, how can he be good? He must bring justice to people who are responsible. And we are all responsible for our actions. So that's one thing God seeks to do, he must do, if he is to be God and good. He has the authority to do it. But secondly, he wants to show mercy on those who, yes, are responsible and, yes, are guilty. But to show mercy on them to bring his love and, yes, forgiveness. That forgiveness is possible. That he uses his authority, his sovereignty, his lordship over the cosmos, over all rulers, over the United Nations, over everything. What does he do with it? He does it to show, yes, that justice matters, but that mercy is possible. Now, if you were in charge, how do you pull that off? How do you pull off both together? How do you ensure that evil and sin are rightly condemned, but that sinners who do evil can be rescued and forgiven? How do you do that at the same time? Well, can you do it at the same time? Well, that is the genius of the cross. Jesus takes on himself what we all deserve so that we have the chance to escape. In a sense, you could say that it buys time. Time to respond to his offer. And once we've responded, once we've found it, we find that the wonders of forgiveness and hope and love are real. And we find the ability to trust in God as the one who is in charge. Because quite frankly, there are days when I struggle to believe that. There's plenty I don't understand. And there's more I could say about each of these points, more that one needs to say, especially if one had time. But what's happened at the cross convinces me that there really is someone in charge, despite appearances from time to time. You know, you read the newspaper and you think, what on earth is going on there? We are responsible human beings. And God takes that seriously. The cross is God's pledge of taking a suffering world seriously. He says, I see that. I know about it. And I will do something about it. The day of justice will come. The cross reminds us that that is a reality. But it also shows that there is hope for those who suffer. So, yes, we should vote. And where we, what we do in life and what we vote for even does matter. It matters even to God. But even if neither we nor the politicians that we put into positions of authority are completely in charge of everything that that happens, that does not mean we are lacking in responsibility. No, we do have responsibility. And God treats us as that. But actually, how we vote, while important, pales into insignificance compared to actually the bigger decision each of us must make, to turn to the one who really is in charge. You want to be on his team, don't you? To turn to the one who really is in charge, and the one who's proved it by stepping into human affairs in the person of Jesus Christ and changing them forever. Thank you very much for your patience listening.